All right, you're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com. This is the podcast series from Security InfoWatch. This is episode 62. Our topic today is active shooters following last night's shooting at a Batman movie premiere in Aurora, Colorado. Our guest today, Steve Lasky, publisher of Security Technology Executive, SecurityInfoWatch.com, security dealer and integrator, and Frank Borelli, editor-in-chief of Officer.com. And I'm Jeff Cole, your host for today's program. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
So we saw last night's shooting. It's all over the news today. 14 dead. Counts. The last count that I saw was an estimate of about 50 persons injured. It was what I've heard. One of the youngest victims was 3 months old. Guys, this is just clearly a terrible situation. But let's start with the obvious question: is can we ever fully protect these movie theaters?
Jeff, I don't think so. You know, unless you want to have it be a high security zone where everybody has to walk through a magnetometer or X-ray machines like we have at airports. I don't think we're ever going to be able to fully protect any public space, such as a mall, a movie theater, a library, anything like that. And even if you did put those measures in effect, there's no guarantee. We still see people get stuff through at airports all the time.
Yeah, and bottom line too, Frank, is the fact that, you know, you already see the American public and how, you know, how divisive the TSA measures at airports are. You know, it's a matter of how much security is enough. How much freedom of movement in public spaces are you willing to surrender in order to feel secure? And you know, it just, you've got spaces that are just too vast. You've got businesses that again do a poor job of training you know, anybody that's an employee to be on the lookout for things that are suspicious or beyond the norm. And from a technology standpoint, you know, most businesses aren't going to set up and impede their customers to have them go walk through metal detectors or be, you know, take a metal detecting wand and scan them as they walk in. So,
Steve, let's talk about that for a second in terms of the business implications of if we did increase security. You know, Frank obviously comes from the law enforcement perspective, and you're coming from the corporate security, the business directive sort of end of things. Is this something that senior management and most of these soft targets would even consider spending money on?
I don't think so. I think it's because of the infrequency and the low percentage of possible occurrence. You know, it's not something that you're going to go out like the movie chain AMC. You know, you've got I think AMC's got 2,400 movie theaters across the country, and I don't see them going out and putting metal detectors or having you know, the 15-year-old kid with braces taking tickets, waving a metal detector wand of everybody that walks in the door, or conversely hiring Allied Barton to come in and put a uniformed security officer at the door. So,
well, and if they do, they're going to pass that cost along to the consumer. And as a consumer, I can tell you right now, I'm already upset about paying $9 for a ticket. I can't imagine paying $20 or $25 for some sense of false security I get to go sit in a theater. Especially when you look at, and I warned you guys up front, when you look at the movement nationwide to go to shall issue laws and concealed carry laws and stand your ground and everything else, with what 38 states in the country now enabling the average law-abiding adult to carry their own firearm. Quite honestly, I'm amazed in Colorado that in that theater there was nobody that could that would stand up and return fire on the guy. That's what got me. I was really. I've seen different numbers. I've seen 12 dead. I've seen 14 dead. I've seen as young as 3 years old. 38 wounded. Nobody there was armed and could take this guy out. That just amazed me.
Maybe they were all teenagers. Maybe they didn't have their permits. It's hard to say, but, you know, Frank, let me stir the pot here a little bit, because I know this is going to stir the pot with you. Do we need gun control?
Well, we've already seen my answer. My quick, easy answer is no, we need less gun control. But that's just my personal opinion. We've already seen people like Mayor Bloomberg in New York trying to leverage this, saying we need more strict gun control. We've seen the pro-gun folks saying, absolutely, we're not putting up with using this as an excuse for more gun laws. I've seen things on social media, on Facebook, saying, you know, that the gun control movement's answer to stopping the guy from shooting people is to take guns away from people who aren't committing crimes, and there's no logic in it. I don't think we need more gun control. I don't know that we need, you know, hundreds of thousands of millions or millions of people carrying more guns. I'm not saying that either, but it does surprise me that with the movement that's been there that this past couple of years for the number of people that are carrying, nobody there was, or they weren't able to take an action. The same observation was made at Virginia Tech, and you know that was a controversial issue because the university had just less than 6 or 7 months before denied a request by students who were of age, who did have their permits issued by the Commonwealth of Virginia, and they were told, no, you're not allowed to carry your gun on campus. It's a no-gun zone. And then, you know, that became public knowledge after Cho goes and on his rampage, and everybody's going, well, what if somebody there could have shot him and taken him out? Would it have reduced the number of casualties, the number of injured? And nobody knows.
No one really does know. Steve, I'd put that question to you from a corporate security perspective is, you know, how would business management or corporate security directors feel about more of their patrons, their customers, carrying concealed weapons in? Would that make them a little nervous?
I think it would make them extremely nervous. You're opening up so many liability issues, premises liability issues. It's an entire can of worms. I mean, you know, most corporate venues don't have their licensed security guards armed. So, you know, having patrons come into your establishments armed, and again, I'm a full supporter of conceal and carry, but man, I'll tell you, it's just it's so easy to misinterpret body language, misinterpret tone, misinterpret language, misinterpret intent. Police have, you know, and again, Frank, in all deference to your years on the force, I mean, police have enough trouble understanding and interpreting intent.
Absolutely.
You're gonna have a layman try to do that. I think that is just beyond silliness.
Well, but the honest reality is we don't necessarily know that nobody is, Steve. And not to be argumentative, my son lives in North Carolina. He's an honorably discharged Marine. They have an open carry law there. Unless the business posts a sign at every entrance prohibiting carry of firearms, then you can carry a firearm there. My son takes a gun nearly everywhere he goes. It's strapped
Frank,
on his hip.
Frank,
yeah.
I have no problem if somebody, you know, I'm, for those trained in firearms and have military experience. But, you know,
I wouldn't fall back on that. I'm just saying these theaters have no way of knowing how many people are carrying guns in there or not now.
That's true.
So anyway, I don't want to get off on the whole gun control issue. It's not really the topic of the podcast, and I don't want Jeff mad at me for the rest of my life. But yeah, I don't know that more guns is the answer, Jeff. I don't know that these gun-free zones, obviously, they're not doing any good. They didn't do any good at Virginia Tech. They didn't do any good in Aurora. And it's a shame to see so many, I don't want to call them willing victims because they certainly weren't, but victims that are at a big disadvantage in being able to defend themselves, I'll put it that way.
And a huge disadvantage. I mean, let's talk about the sort of situational awareness that these persons would have. You know, a gun starts going off in the back of the theater. There's gas in the room. Their eyes are adjusted only for, you know, the very dark light. They're probably, I don't know what point in the movie this happened, but as we can imagine, the Batman movie is a very dynamic movie series, lots of action. I mean, they're going to be sucked, you know, psychologically sucked into the movie, very limited situational awareness. And so I would say that, you know, they're going to be limited on terms of their response. So I would start to think, let's talk about how has police response to these events changed. Let's say it was only just a little ways around the Denver suburbs perimeter that in 1999 we saw the Columbine shootings, where we saw law enforcement stage outside the facility, wait for SWAT, while the shootings went on. How are those law enforcement responses changing today, Frank?
Well, they've drastically changed in the last decade because of the public outcry after Columbine, and I'm not being critical of the folks in Littleton in any way in the way they responded. At the time, they did everything that their protocols and their training had called on them to do, and that was to respond, to set up a perimeter to contain the situation, gather and report on intel, and let the SWAT guys come in and do their thing. And that's pretty much the way protocol and training has developed since the late 60s when we first created SWAT teams in this country. In partial response to an active shooter, Charles Whitman at the Texas Tower. Now, since then, we've developed active shooter response protocols, and essentially, I hate to say this, we're very reactionary in law enforcement. We always are training for what we messed up the year before, 2 years before, whatever the insurance claims have pointed out that we need more training on, or whatever new policies or procedures have been put into effect. We're not really proactive in the training venue, so we've now trained pretty well everybody that's new and coming on the force and the veterans that are still with the force to take out Harrison Kleibold at Columbine. Well, this guy in Aurora wasn't Harrison Kleibold at Columbine. He's a shooter in a movie theater. Sung-hee Cho barricaded himself in and made sure the SWAT teams couldn't get in there. And you don't get much better than that. At Virginia Tech, we had two fully equipped, ready-to-go SWAT teams on the scene in less than 2 minutes. It took them 6 minutes to make entry because they weren't prepared to have to breach. Once they did, Cho took himself out. We've changed how we do business. We're still not evolving as fast as the criminals' imaginations are. And I don't know if we can.
Absolutely. I mean, it's certainly, we've seen since Columbine, I mean, like you said, you know, that Cho, you know, locked the doors behind him. This guy went in and threw some sort of gas and canister into the room, some sort of tear gas. So their motives, or not their motives, but their actions are evolving, certainly, as they keep an eye on the response methodologies. Tell you what, let's close with the final question for each of you. Do we expect copycat incidents in theaters? And the reason I bring this up is that in Paris, one of the theaters canceled its premiere of Batman after hearing about this incident. Do we expect copycat incidents?
Well, I mean, you look at NYPD Police Commissioner Ray Kelly. I mean, they're going to post uniformed police at movie theaters in the five boroughs of New York because that's exactly what he said. He's worried about copycat killers. I mean, bottom line here is, there's two ways to look at this. There's, you're looking at obviously somebody who was very mentally disturbed, and it'd be interesting to see if he's a war vet with post traumatic syndrome, or if he's just an anti-establishment nutcase. And it's also kind of interesting to note that the main character or the main villain in the movie is a black clad, anti-establishment, violent man who, was trying to take down the establishment. So, whether you get, these fringe lunatics reading that into as, some sort of cinema verde hero worship, you really have to wonder. But it's just a reflection on where we are today with we've sort of been desensitized to violence because, it's really, the fact that a movie like this is a PG-13 with just huge amounts of violence. Again, you just wonder if that has anything to do with it. The age-old media argument that we face. So,
sure. Frank, what do you think? Are law enforcement preparing for copycat incidents in the coming years?
I don't think we have a choice but to prepare for it. Excuse me. I think Commissioner Kelly's response is kind of plugging the cracks in the dam, if you will. Putting a police officer in uniform in a movie theater just makes him the first target, in my opinion. I haven't seen, in response to Steve's other observation, I haven't seen anything about this gentleman having been in the service or a war vet or any of that. It's my understanding this gentleman was a PhD student at the local university, Colorado,
yeah.
Denver University,
and
was in the middle of withdrawing from it. So when you look at the anti-establishment kind of nutcase, maybe, I think this is absolutely the best setting in the world. You get somebody who wants to act out some kind of insane crime at a movie where the criminals are insane. I think, Steve, I agree with you. It's not. It's sadly ironic, I think, maybe is a way to put it. I don't think police have a choice but to prepare for copycatters. I'm not sure how many we'll actually see. It's not as easy. anybody can get a gas mask. A lot of people can get bullet-resistant armor. Not that many people know how to put together smoke bombs and explosive devices and stuff. They can certainly learn. This isn't as easy to copy, I think, as a lot of people will think that it is.
Frank, thank you for coming on the program. Steve, thank you as well. If you want more information, listeners, about either of these two gentlemen's publications, head over to officer.com where you can find Frank and his team producing all the latest news and information for the law enforcement community. And, of course, follow us, myself and Steve, at securityinfowatch.com and Security Technology Executive Magazine and Security Dealer and Integrator Magazine. Gentlemen, thank you for coming on the program.
It was
Thanks,
a pleasure.
Jeff, and kudos again to your comments on ABC News. I encourage everybody else to see Jeff's comments as well on the link to ABC News.
Well, thank you, Steve. And this wraps up episode 62 of SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com.